Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Today's guest is the return of Hamilton Souther. Hamilton is an absolutely incredible, incredible curandero, shaman, medicine man of the Amazon, and just a wealth of knowledge, far beyond just working with plant medicines, and somebody that I really, really love learning from and love being around and love working with. He's done, like I said, he had a podcast here before, but he's also done a couple of great ones that were longer form on Living 4D with Paul Check. So we'll link to those in the show notes if you guys want to get into those. Longer form podcasts, they are phenomenal. And if you want more Hamilton, that's the best place to find it, in my opinion. Also, if you want more Hamilton, like if you want to be like me and work with him, wait till the end of this podcast and you will have a few different options that'll be in the show notes for ways you can contact and start to get your hands in the sand and see what this practice has actually looked like. What does it mean to actually become an adept and a master working with different medicines? And for all the reasons, you know, like if you're a practitioner, cool. Personally, I just want to be able to find my way back out. I personally just want to know how to reorient myself if I get spun around, as Hamilton puts it. But lots of good stuff in here. I love the way Hamilton views the world and understands it, and he's always welcome on this podcast, so this is great having him back on. There's a number of ways you can support the podcast. Send it to a friend, word of mouth, spread the good word, and support our sponsors. They make this show possible. Before we get to sponsors, Fit for Service is just about done. We are done. Today is the first day of our teaching, first week of our teaching, so Montana is wrapped tight and shut, locked down. Not like 2020, but a good lockdown. And have no fear. If you were on the fence and you're really thinking about this, you go to fitforservice.com. You can sign up for September in Sedona or January in Malibu and pick any class you want. All six classes are going to be available still. None of them in the second trimester are sold out. I believe Godzi's Mentally Fit class was the first to sell out. So if you're interested in working with Eric Godzi, it's probably a pretty good idea to jump in there quickly. I'm just going to throw that hint out there. But I would love to have you. You want to get physically dialed. You want to bring your health to another level. The Physically Fit class taught by me is going to be your go-to and the very best. And then, as always, we have a summit where you get to meet amazing like-minded people and go through challenging but fruitful activities that bring the best out of yourself and really unlock altered states of consciousness in a legal way, stateside. So lots of good stuff there. Support our sponsors. They make the show possible. Energy Bits has been a very new sponsor. It's one that's actually changed my life in a way because it's become an immediate part of my supplement program for my wife and my son. Little Wolfie's too young for it, but holy shit, this stuff works. And it's one of those things when you try something and there's a palpable experience of it, those are the supplements that I really draw myself towards. And you know, we talk mental health with Eric Godzi. Mental health is essential, but protecting it has been elusive. This all changed thanks to Dr. Chris Palmer's new book, Brain Energy, where he shows why all mental health disorders are a result of damaged mitochondria. Mental health requires you to heal and restore your mitochondria, and I agree. That's why I wanted you to know about Energy Bits. Their algae tablets contain nutrients like superoxide dismutase, phycocyanin, and glutathione that are proven to heal, restore, and protect the mitochondria. Yes, even in the brain. The science about this is provocative and plentiful, but algae's role in restoring mitochondria has been virtually unknown until now. Energy Bits founder Catherine Arnson has spent 13 years researching algae, and she recently made a startling discovery. Science and nature have conspired to protect your brain and mitochondria with the oldest life on Earth, algae. Amazingly, mitochondria even evolved from algae, but that's another story. It's documented in evolutionary science called endosymbiotic theory. The bottom line, mitochondria are essential for your mental health, and Energy Bits algae tablets can help you achieve it. You can purchase Energy Bits algae tablets online at www.energybits.com, and if you use my discount code KKP, you get 20% off everything, and that's a no-brainer. And check out KKP episode 330 with Catherine Arnson to learn all about Energy Bits and their function with the mitochondria. Next, we're sponsored today by buyoptimizers.com/kingsboo. These guys are the kings of the longest URLs. They are also the kings of all things digestion and, of course, magnesium. Enter promo code kingsboo10 in all caps to get 10% off any order. I first started trying this magnesium breakthrough because I was familiar with quite a few magnesium supplements, and one of the things that happens when you go low carb ketogenic or carnivore as you start to get muscle cramps on occasion. Some people attribute this to keto flu. And one of the big missing ingredients is magnesium. So I started upping my magnesium, and that started upping the amount of times I had to shit all day long. And that was not a favorable outcome, nor did it get rid of my cramps. And if you've ever had diarrhea, you're definitely not going to get rid of your cramps. You're going to add to them. So really, I had to look for a solution in the routine and really had to look for a solution in what I was doing. This led me to search for something else. And ever since I started adding magnesium breakthrough to my nightly routine, I've been able to quiet my mind and get the best sleep ever, also getting rid of my cramps. Sleep has completely changed now that I have no problem falling asleep and waking up refreshed and energized. And for me personally, magnesium breakthrough has helped to solve my cramping issues throughout the day. It is a wonderful thing for stress management, even though you might not think that. How does a mineral do that? Magnesium is responsible for so many biochemical processes in the body. You can't overstate the importance of it. Unlike other magnesium supplements that might be giving you 1 to 2 forms of magnesium, like I was taking, Magnesium Breakthrough contains all 7 forms of magnesium designed to help calm your mind and help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Over 75% of the population is magnesium deficient. And what most people don't know is that even if they're taking a magnesium supplement, they're still deficient because they're not getting all 7 forms. Magnesium Breakthrough is the ultimate way to give your body all 7 forms in one supplement. This is super easy, guys. I'm telling you, the capsules are super easy. And I've even started experimenting with the Magnesium Breakthrough with Bear because he's an athlete down. He's about 9 years old. And so they have flavored versions that are naturally flavored in powder form that we'll mix a little drink and give to both kids before bed. And it's awesome. It is a great, safe way to help your kids fall asleep and stay asleep and actually enhance the same things. Because if we're not getting enough magnesium in our diet, the kids most certainly aren't getting enough magnesium in their diet. Nurture your mind and body with this all-natural, full-spectrum magnesium supplement. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/kingsbu and use promo code KINGSBU10, that's KINGSBU10 in all caps, during checkout to save 10%. Go to bioptimizers.com/kingsbu now and enter promo code KINGSBU10 to get 10% off any order. Again, that's bioptimizers.com/kingsbu. One of today's sponsors is also happyhippo.com/KKP. Enter code KKP for 15% off the entire store. Happy Hippo is an amazing kratom company that has a wide variety of cocktails and ready-to-drinks that are great on the fly, but I personally am a powder guy. I like making my own little concoctions. I'll mix it with some greens powder, something like that, to help knock out the bittery taste, and then I can really titrate and dial in the exact dose that I'm looking for. I've been working with kratom for some time now. I think Mark Bell introduced me to it. It's phenomenal stuff. It really helps with alleviation of old injuries where I feel like it's not numbing or getting rid of anything. It's just allowing me to tap into my body in a way that allows for that mind-muscle connection that Arnold Schwarzenegger always used to talk about back before he became a vegan and started writing self-help books. That said, I think kratom is a must-have in the medicine cabinet. It is absolutely incredible. And the more I experiment with it, the more I understand that there's a use for this in many different situations. It's absolutely phenomenal pre-workout. As I mentioned, the mind-muscle connection is enhanced. There is an elevation and a feeling, a positive feeling, a euphoria that happens from it, but it doesn't disassociate me. It doesn't give me blurred vision. It doesn't make me incapable of performing tasks. And in fact, fine motor skills actually improve for me on the right strains of kratom, which I absolutely love. So then I can still get a lot of shit done and feel better, but not slack off or feel like I'm incapacitated in any way, shape, or form. Morning time is great if you want to skip coffee or stack it with coffee because of the fact that you're going to get a huge boost in energy from this. Mid-afternoon, also really good. If you're not doing caffeine mid-afternoon, I cut out all caffeine afternoon, and this is a phenomenal thing in the early afternoon to springboard you into all the energy you need for the rest of your day. I've been working with a number of different Happy Hippo products. I've tried the Yellow Sunshine, which I think is phenomenal. It's a little bit heady for me, and the whole thing is, you know, as I'm talking about, I'm more of a body guy. It's worth experimenting with the N=1 because my neurochemistry is going to be different from yours. Our microbiome is going to be different from one another. How this stuff enters the bloodstream is going to be different than one another. And so it really does take the N=1. And as you run those experiments, start low, about half a teaspoon, work your way up to a teaspoon, and play with the dose range from there. Also, take your time. You know, as you build a relationship with this plant, take your time in coming to understand it and really listen to what it's doing. And follow your intention. Intention will be a big one that helps guide you to the right places. With Happy Hippo, you're getting a product that has been sterilized to pathogens, tested for impurities and heavy metals, and sold with a guarantee. We stand by our products so you can sleep soundly, knowing exactly what is and isn't in your kratom. So kratom, in my own words, kratom is a medicine. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal product that can help with quite a few different things. Now, of course, I can't talk about all those things due to FDA regulations and whatnot, but I'm telling you right now, it is a miracle from nature. And once you can start to work with this thing and find the right dose and the right sequence and the right timing, you're going to find this to be the same. Check out happyhippo.com/KKP. That's HAPPYHIPPO.com/KKP and enter code KKP at checkout for 15% off the entire store. That's happyhippo.com/KKP and code word KKP at checkout for 15% off. Last but not least, we have a brand new sponsor, one that I've been searching for some time. And you're going to find out very quickly why I've been looking for this. In all the time we have been alive, the US dollar has always been the primary currency. But that may not be the case much longer. China is set to dethrone the dollar, and possibly much sooner than you think. The world's biggest economies are ditching the dollar for the yuan, collapsing the US currency and causing unprecedented inflation and crashing markets. And if that wasn't scary enough, it paves the way for the government to take control over all your money with a new digital dollar. We've been talking about CBDCs on this podcast for years now. Don't let your life savings become a casualty of failing banks or currency wars. Now is the time to call the only precious metal dealer I trust, American Hartford Gold. They'll show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your wealth portfolio with physical gold and silver. With the finest products, amazing customer service, and a buyback commitment, American Hartford Gold has a 5-star rating from thousands of reviews and an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau. American Hartford Gold supports content like this that is committed to bringing you the truth. Tell them I sent you, and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first order. So call them now. Click the link in the description of the show notes or call 866-366-1948 or text Kyle, K-Y-L-E, to 65532. And of course, we've got that linked in the show notes, so just click it and you'll be good to go. These guys are the real deal, and it's been something that I've been really harping on. Listen to guys like Sean Ryan, listen to a bunch of different podcasts where people in the know who understand with a military background and have been to dark places and seen the rest of the world, like this shit could crumble in an instant. And it's not, I'm not a doomsday guy, but it is worth covering the bases, especially if you have kids, especially if you're the sole provider for your family. It's very important that we cover the bases and have a little bit stored away in different places. And throughout history, this has been one of the most valuable ways to do that and one of the smartest ways to protect wealth. Certainly worth having this if things go sour, because no one's going to accept a dollar if something goes bad. But gold and silver have always been in the game and always will be in the game. And they're a fantastic way to protect your assets and make sure that no matter what bumpy roads we have ahead, you've got the ability to feed your family and keep a roof over your heads. Without further ado, my brother, Hamilton Souther. All right, we've been chatting for about 5 minutes and we've had some technological errors going back and forth in our pre-recording. So it is my hope and prayer that we just start recording and the technology stops fucking with us.
I think we're good now. I think it's all set up.
It looks good. Man, you look great. I love the background here. I didn't notice this the last time we podcasted. I don't know if you were traveling or not at the studio, but podcast studio looks awesome.
Yeah, thanks. No, I was traveling then. I was up in the States visiting family and stuff, but we just put this together for the Blue Morpho podcast that we're launching, and also just to show a little bit more of the vibe of everything we've been creating, all the arts, AI art that I've been making, and super stoked about how technology is merging with, everything that we're doing in the health and wellness space to really show what's been, before that only something you get an experience of if you actually drop in and have it,
Yeah, 100%. For those that are just listening, because probably 95% plus will only hear this and not watch it on YouTube for whatever reason. Lots of friends in the podcast game. A small handful of them have more people watch YouTube than listen to them on iTunes or Spotify, but I'm the exact opposite. So I just wanted to describe what Hamels is talking about. Is he's done some AI images behind him of various animals and states of consciousness and colors that you could come across in an altered state of consciousness, particularly on ayahuasca or something as profound. And to describe that, it doesn't quite do it justice. But if you see some of the art, like if you look at an Alex Gray painting and you've been there, you might say, oh, fuck, I remember this space, you know, or even the some of the ayahuasca art where you see the little Icaros are drawn in. And for whatever reason, you recognize it as like, hey, that's familiar for some reason. You know, I couldn't paint that. I couldn't draw it myself, but there's a familiarity to that experience that's recognizable.
Yeah. When I went down to the Amazon and first had these experiences in my early 20s, I was so blown away by them. I got captivated. And then it was impossible to describe to anybody what we were talking about. And it either seemed sci-fi or it seemed fanciful and just too beyond reality. Like, hey, that guy's tripping out, et cetera. And, you know, finally we're getting to a point 20 years later where we have these ways to be able to show and describe really the nature of what we were interacting with and connecting with. And I think it's like a watershed moment for consciousness, because before that we were just experiencing it, but now we can actually show it. And I'm super grateful for that.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, talking about technology and things like that, what do you think? I know a lot of people are trying for better or worse to map these different states of consciousness via fMRI machines and scanners and things like that. And they say, well, there's certain frequencies and these parts of the brain are lit up. So if we can somehow map that and redo it with either magnets or electromagnetism, things like that, and different nodes, we might be able to recreate the experience minus the medicine. What do you think about people that are trying to accomplish? Have you heard of it? Have you seen, you know, like there's a whole field of study right now to get this going. And I'm like, I don't think that's the point. I really don't, you know, like, there's a group of people that are trying to, they may have created it already, but it's basically like, it was touted as bad trip off, you know, like, so if you were having a hard time on acid or psilocybin, and you went to the hospital, they could give you an injection or you could have, you know, a prescription for it at home. Something's going south. You don't like what you see and it just shuts the experience off. Like that's where the sauce is. And I think, you know, if we're trying to create things like this, all of my worst experiences have been the most transformative by far. And I would only describe them as bad or worse in the act itself. But in hindsight, I recognize like all the gifts those gave me and all of the, however painful or challenging that bad trip was, it was exactly what I needed in that moment in my life. And had I had the ability to shut it off when it got tough, that would have robbed me of everything I gained from the experience.
Yeah, I think you got a confluence happening, right? So what's the point of turning off a bad trip, or what's the point of bringing tech to all these experiences? I think that you bring tech to it to expand the nature and the number of experiences. And in that aspect of it, more the merrier. So, you know, there's an entry point here for each person. So if you want your entry point to be a meditation, if you want your entry point to be a magnetic induced light-based psychedelic experience, great, have it. It gets you to understand what we're talking about. But our ancestors discovered Earth tech, like Gaia technology, a long time ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago. Our ancestors discovered it. It's not some like rando people that lived there. Those are our ancestors. And they've been developing this technology and passing it down generation by generation, literally for us now to have. And we're now a global culture. And so they've done the hard work to preserve it. And I think that the teachings are there to show that there's purpose in all of the experiences. So I like the idea of tech making the entry point to this easier for people, but you'll never take away the importance of the plants.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very well said. Well, I've loved you both times on Paul Check's podcast. We'll link to those in the show notes for people who missed it. You guys did a 5-hour phenomenal expose of what to do and what not to do when it comes to these experiences. So I don't even need to touch that material. If people are interested in this and haven't done it, they've got questions. Paul and you really iron out every detail. You left no stone unturned. So I think that's a fantastic one. The most recent one you did was also fantastic, and it covered a wide variety of topics, some of which we'll talk about today. But one of the things that really caught my mind that made me want to talk to you today is this idea about plant medicines that aren't necessarily psychoactive, right? And how you can get to these things to bring in and harness the spirit to become one with some of the different attributes of these different plants. And one of the things that you had told Paul was one of the very first plants that you dieted was one in which would make you a better hunter, and would tune you into your surroundings so you would actually know where to find food because you were left. So I'd love for you to retrace this for people that missed that. Talk about that experience and what that was like and what was the name of that plant that you dieted with so you'd actually know how to find food to feed yourself.
Yeah, dieta is ancient technology. So first thing we want to understand is like, what's the point of dieta? Dieta is a technology. It's not just some ritual. And the ancestral people of the Amazon figured out how to pass the attributes of different kinds of beings, both plant and animal, to you. Not just you could copy them, but that you could actually have them. That is a wild converging, like merge of qualities, right? So that's the first part about it. And when I got to the Amazon, they looked at me like, what are you doing here? You don't even know how to live here. You don't know how to walk. You don't know how to talk. Like, what are we going to do with you? You're like this huge liability. So like the first thing we have to teach you is how to forage for food, right? And hunting out in the Amazon, when you live deep off grid, it's not just a sport. It's how you feed yourself. That is going to the supermarket, is going to the forest, right? So, you know, you're in this natural environment. It's a very savvy environment and it's very aware of you. You have to learn how to become aware of it. And so you diet this plant called Ahosacha. Ahosacha means jungle garlic. And you diet Ahosacha. And I did a 15-day diet with it, which, you know, there are 9-day diets, 15-day diets, et cetera. But the Ahosacha does two key things. One, it shuts off your smell to the space. So it's like a scent kill, but it does it at a level that even months after using it, it's not like, you know, rubbing it on your skin, it's in you. And then the animals don't smell you the same way anymore, which is fascinating. Even though if you smelled yourself, like you would smell yourself the same, right? And then the second piece of it is it teaches you where they are. And I can't explain that in words. You have to do it and just go out there and you'll sense, feel where the animals are in the experience. It's wild. And you have to do it to try it. Understand, it's like beyond a psychic connection. It's like you are one with nature and nature is communicating with you where different kinds of plants and animals are. And this is my mind was blown, right? I had no idea how you even could think this way. And to them, it was just a technology that they used, like we would use GPS or something like that.
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm highly, highly drawn to that as a dieta, plant to dieta with. I haven't had the fortune yet to dieta any plants, but I've had a few on the list that really, really draw to me. But the moment you talked about that, I got lit up inside. Like, yeah, this is important, not just from a hunting standpoint, but also to know, because no matter where we're at in the world, there is this same level of communication happening if we can tune into that. And I've often thought, you know, there's medicine plants in the desert, you know, sage grows there and a wide variety of things. There's medicine plants in any, you know, in the Pacific Northwest that are going to be different here in Texas and different from the Amazon. So that'd be very cool to be able to tap in that way. So I'm super drawn to that.
Yeah. I mean, what I liked about it was, you know, I grew up with plants being ornamental or they were a food or they were like some kind of utility, like wood for your house or something. When I got to the Amazon, they just said they had a fourth concept for it, which was that plants have attributes and you can actually receive those attributes and ally with those attributes and that they could help you in your normal daily life. They could help you when you needed medicine to heal. And then they could also help you in these consciousness arts inside the visionary ceremonies.
I like that. And so you know, for people that don't know, most practitioners who are practicing curanderos that work with ayahuasca, they will dieta a series of these plants, either prescribed to them from the people they learn from or the ones that they're drawn to themselves. And as you harness these attributes, this is what you bring to the ceremony as the facilitator, correct? And you can learn the songs of these different plants and bring those in at the various points in time in the ceremony. Is that right?
Exactly. It's 100% right. You learn the attributes of the plants by doing the dieta. And then when you go to ceremony, you're a conduit for it. You have them inside you. So it's changed you, right? So you have been altered by this experience. And now when you need those attributes, you bring it forth in the ikar or in the chants, and it changes the visionary landscape that everyone's in. So everyone's in some kind of visionary state there, whether they're seeing the kaleidoscopic fractals, whether they're seeing intricate geometry, whether they're sitting there in their mind going, I don't know what the hell's going on. You know, there's all the different states everyone's in. You bring in trees, it changes it. You bring in animals, it changes it. Some people have a very direct experience of that. Others are more indirect, but that's really the idea. And then you share those attributes with everybody in the room.
I love that. That's awesome. What animals have you worked with? You know, I imagine you're not just sipping, drinking jaguar blood to make communion with the jaguar, but I'm, you know, obviously there's very prominent animals in the Amazon that are shown throughout their art and things like that. The first dozen times I experienced ayahuasca, it was on a Native American reservation in California. So I was tapping into a lot of the North American animals. That's why our kids are named Bear and Wolf. You know, that's what came through to me in those experiences, you know, very viscerally.
Well, I think it's what you focus on more than anything. So you tap into animals and connect with them based on their spirit. Their spirit means like their vibration, their presence, what they mean, you know. And so like a bear, totally different than a wolf, like completely different. So like those different essences is what you're really tapping into. And you can connect with any of them ultimately. A lot of shamans get kind of like defined by it. So like, oh, I'm the jaguar shaman, I'm the eagle shaman, I'm the raven shaman, etc. But I found that I just want to be tapped into all of them. Like Julio, who was my teacher, he was really tied into the jaguar, but also lots of different animals. And the eagle was kind of like this universal portal to all the other animals. So we would tap in strong with the eagle, and then from there we would go to any of them. So I loved the dolphins and the Pink River dolphins, and then the otters. They were all super neat. And then tapped into the birds, like the egrets. There's all these different kind of egrets down in the Amazon, eagles we would connect with. And then loved kind of all of them, really. I mean, I can't say there weren't ones that I would ever not feel connected with. So I love, you know, all the water ones like whales and different kind of fish. And then we'd get into the African ones like your lions and leopards and, you know, buffalo, zebras, stuff like that, giraffes. And then we would just kind of go all over the polar bears, the Arctic ones. I mean, all of them I think were incredible to connect with. You know, I think what's important for someone to understand in ceremony, you're not connecting with something like it's a cartoon imagination, and you're not connecting with something like you're at a zoo looking at an animal. It's this in-between space where they're super colorful, like you see in the art, and they're gridded, and it's what they call what the indigenous people call their spirit. It's like this ancestral blueprint of them, and you're connecting into this core essence of them. And it's just a magnificent and magical experience.
Yeah, like the all bison or the all jaguar, you know, the archetypical piece that all things emanate from.
Exactly.
In that particular species. I love that. Yeah, and I too have felt that way too. And people in spiritual communities get caught up with wanting, and I don't mean this about the shaman, of course, like these guys are dialed in practitioners that have spent their life working with that. And if they have a stronger connection with one than another, I can't argue with that. But a lot of people, you know, that are novices in this space are like, yeah, I'm a such and such, and I got this, you know, and it's kind of like, all right. I think if you open yourself to it, you'd be able to connect with any of them, probably. But yeah, for certain, there's things that are speaking to you right now. And I tell my kids that, you know, of like, you guys are humans and these are your names, but you can connect to anything you want in nature. You're going to be able to tap into all those things. You're not limited by your name to one particular thing there. But I like that. The big bird medicine, the eagle medicine. We have a lot of hawks here, and the caracaras, the Mexican eagle in South Texas. And there's something to those. We also have egrets at the farm, and then a blue heron, which is like fucking gigantic. Like it's a whole presence. You see this thing, and when it takes off, it's almost in silent. It just goes up like, wow, man. Like there's a huge, massive presence to that animal.
Yeah, I think people identify with certain things and they want to have a label. They want to like add to their label, right? Like they have their self and now they want to identify with more things. And I actually thought that was really limiting. You know, it's like if you're going to be a shaman, be an animal shaman, not like I'm the blank shaman, especially if it's not from our culture. So it's like, you know, I understand if you're from like an indigenous culture and you really understand how to tap into something like that, go for it. But if you have an opportunity to meet many of the other ones, do that. Be an animal-based shaman, not just one animal or another. And learn to really love nature. Like there's a really important part about loving nature and being attuned with nature. And when you grow up living in the forest, you are attuned with nature. You don't have to go like get it again. But when you grow up being born in a hospital and then you live in a suburb or something like that, or you live in an urban environment, you have to go learn to reconnect with your nature. And I think that that's like a good first step. Just go go to a vision quest, just go out camping, but like get away from the car, like go backpack 2 days in and just go see what it feels like to just go be in nature. Start with that and become a nature person first. And then from there, learn what the animals and plants are and what they're doing.
Yeah, it's been a massive retracing for me being a city boy. I have no doubt that ayahuasca was the portal to reconnect to it. And that started, you know, when I was still living in my mom's garage fighting in the UFC. And I just asked her, can I plant trees in your backyard? She said, yeah. And then the next year I said, can I start a little raised bed garden? And she said, yeah. And I just started putting things in there and watering them and having this connection. And I've had some pretty profound experiences. I think I've told you this in the past. I know I've talked about it on the podcast, so I'm not going to, you know, repeat it, but you know, hummingbirds coming up to me 3 feet away on the day my son was born, dead sober while I'm watering the plants. Like that doesn't happen indoors. It doesn't happen in a video game. It happens in real life in nature, you know? And I think if we build that connection, that can happen in a suburb. You know, we live on a 10th of an acre right now in Austin before we're getting ready to move out to the farm. And knowing what I've learned before, it was like, let's recreate our own little oasis on this tiny backyard. We put in 30-foot tall bunch bamboo. That way we have a little privacy. We've planted a plum tree and an apple tree and tons of flowers and flowering vines. And we've got bees and hummingbirds and all sorts of stuff comes back there. And we got little bird feeders out too. So there's a way we can have that connection, even if you're in a fucking apartment. You know, like don't cancel yourself because you don't live in the Amazon or you don't have a farm. Like all of that's just an excuse to have. And anywhere you go, you can find places that are nearby where there's it's a little bit more of a natural setting. You know, and one of the things I loved from Dr. Will Tagle, who is an author, PhD in psychology, PhD in physics, and a medicine man, North American medicine man under Bearheart Williams. One of the things he said is everything has its own eco field. You know, and for if you're sensitive to it, you can tap into that. But he, you know, before when I was complaining to him, we were on a walk, I was complaining that I just live on this 10th of an acre. And he goes, create your own eco field. That doesn't matter. Like that's going to co-resonate with everything around you. And it's going to be palpable the more you interact with that and have a relationship with it. And he's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree. I think like go to the grocery store, get a plant. They sell them there. It's hard to believe. At the grocery store, they'll sell a plant. Go get one, take it home, you know, find some sunlight for it. And go get on the internet and find out how to take care of it. And just start taking care of that one little thing, right? And get to know that thing. Not just like, oh, that's a plant. Like just get it and get to know it. And be like, hey, what's up? Like, I'm going to help you grow. And just see that itself could be a little eco field. And I like the idea of you transforming the space where you are. Look at all the biodiversity that you've already brought into it. I think that's how we start to understand what we are as part of nature. And we can certainly bring that into our environment.
I love that. You know, we've talked before and you've talked with Paul about this, and it's certainly worth rehashing because as the world turns, it seems like there's always something else that we got to look out for, or always something else that's on the horizon that could be potentially shitty. When we think of the amalgamation of all the shit that's gone wrong, and you start to reduce it to disconnections from the heart, disconnections from nature, not knowing ourselves, not knowing our place in reality, it really seems like reconnecting to nature is a pretty big fucking deal, like a foundational piece of what we need to build our understandings off of. What are some of the ways you would do that? You've mentioned a few, but how do we reconnect to nature? How do we reconnect to the self as well?
Yeah. First, reconnecting to nature is about discovering your nature. Like you are nature. As weird as that may sound to somebody growing up in an urban environment, you are actually still nature. It doesn't matter how much you abstract the space around you. So you reconnect to this nature first, and you recognize that you're nature and you have a nature and you want to know it. And that nature is going to come through yourself. And where most people get tweaked out is they think they're supposed to emulate somebody else to be themselves. They think they're supposed to like compare and copy to somebody else, but yourself is everything you're doing. It's everything. It's all your thoughts, all your feelings, all your dreams, all your imaginations, all your emotions. It's the way your body's biological and cell dividing and processing chemicals and molecules right now just to be able to be listening to this. It's how all your senses work. That's yourself. Yourself isn't some abstracted thing like some psychological ghost entity outside of you that you can think about. Like, dude, just go sit in front of the mirror and be like, hi, I'm myself. Start right there. Like, just ground and like, I'm biological. I'm not some like human abstraction. I'm biological. I'm myself. that'll get you tapped into yourself. Like, that's it. I wish it were a bigger story, but it's not. But that is the biggest story, right? It's not like I got to go like see something in some like movie to figure it out. Like, no, that's the story. Now you got to get comfortable with that. That's no joke, getting comfortable with yourself. So, you know, you can learn to sit with yourself. You can learn to just like lie down on the floor for 10 minutes and just be with yourself, like in Shavasana. You can do guided meditation to grasp yourself and understand yourself. You can do kind of thought analysis and look at how you think and use your mind. And so you can like, you know, kind of do that introspection. And then you can always, you know, get to know yourself just by dropping in with some plant medicine. And that's my favorite way. My true favorite way to know yourself is to alter yourself and then see what happens. So a great way to do that is with like coffee, tea, cacao in the morning. Like, it doesn't have to be a hallucinogen or a visionary plant. It can just be like, here I am totally sober in the morning and I'm going to drink this big cup of cacao and I'm going to see what happens. Like, that's me. I altered myself and my heart's going to go boom and I'm going to feel this rush go through my body. And now I'm just going to sit and be with that. And that's you. And what I like about it is it's like, it's not, oh my God, I'm tripping. It's how much I've changed from where I started. So that's me changing. So it just constantly shows me changing. And that goes back to what you were saying about the quote, bad trip. There are no bad trips. There are challenging moments. Bad trip is the wrong concept. There are challenging moments where you're being challenged. And we evolved into who we are because we were willing to be challenged. And so being babied by ourselves and our experience doesn't do us any good. And we want to be challenged in ourselves and we want to challenge ourselves to know ourselves. And so I like those.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's been my experience. Obviously, the naysayer would say, what about the guy who killed himself? Or what about the guy who died? Or what about the this and that and the other as an excuse? But it's been my understanding that whatever challenge I'm presented with, however hard it is, it's something I can handle, or else I wouldn't be presented with it in this moment. And if I look back at the, you know, in the rear view at that, every challenge experience I've gone through was max level at that time, but it was what I could sustain at that time. I've talked about this on my podcast, but my wife and I had done ayahuasca a dozen times together. She never relived her childhood. We do our first 5 grams ground psilocybin night at home together. And she relives being molested as a child for 4 years. And she kept asking, why am I seeing this now? And I said, because you're ready for it now. That there's an intelligence into the things that we're bringing into our body that we co-intelligently work on stuff little by little with. And you know this from experience as being a shaman for as long as you have, you're not going to get the kitchen sink your first night. If you had a fucked up childhood, you don't have to yank back the curtain and relive everything all at once. It's going to come in stages and in layers. And in doing that, you can slowly piece yourself back together and heal from whatever it is that you need to heal from.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, the recommendation of using plant medicines is within the context of responsible use. So just like the recommendation be like, hey, drive a car. Yeah, put on your seatbelt too, right? Know how to drive the car. So if you're a novice and you don't know how to use a plant medicine, you need to do this with a guide who really is experienced and knows how to do it, and better if they're a master. And depending on the severity of your needs, knowing what your needs are goes up the severity of the mastery of the person you want to work with. Right. So if you have big needs, you need a big master who knows how to handle all those things. And so plant medicines aren't about being thunderstruck by the nature of the experience. It's about healing, or it's about a medicine actually transforming you. So there's like two paths. There's the healing path and the learning path. You learn through the nature of the experiences themselves, and the healing comes through as needed. Right. And so I think like a lot of people get this idea that it's like some distortion of psychology. But it's really not. It's an interaction with the real medicine that's there to help you and heal you. And what's interesting about the medicine is that it asks you to participate in the experience. It's not like a knock you out drug and then you wake up different, or like, you know, taking an antibiotic that you have no connection with and it just kills something in your body. It actually keeps you awake and lucid as you go through the experience. And that's the purpose there of the guide, obviously, to be able to support you and help you while you have that experience.
That's absolutely true. And something that I'll refresh people on that you and Paul really talked about last time is this wide variety of practitioner. And I was just having a conversation. I was telling Bear about you, and Bear's about to turn 9. And I was telling him like, hey, when you're old enough, I think I'm going to have you go sit with Hamilton. And he's who I'm podcasting with. And he had questions and things like that. And we were talking about you know, when you vet something, like you and Paul talked about, you know, there's so many practitioners in the world. It's kind of, it reminds me of jujitsu in a way. Like you can be a black belt in jujitsu and there's guys who have been training longer. You know, they've been a black belt longer than I've been training in jujitsu. So I got my black belt in 2016. I rolled with Robert Drysdale and he's been a black belt longer than I've been training in the sport. And that difference was there. It was like the difference between me and a white belt was the difference between me and him as a black belt. So there's that level, you know, as well that you're speaking to from somebody who is a really good facilitator versus a master. And I appreciate that. And you guys, you know, obviously went into great detail around it. The pitfall of that is there are white belts, blue belts, and purple belts serving medicine. And, you know, when it comes to things like ayahuasca or high-dose psilocybin, we've been talking about things like that. Like you're doing psychic fucking surgery on somebody. You don't want a guy with a shaky hand. Dan Engel talked about that, you know, back in the day. And I was like, that is a great analogy. I do not want a surgeon with a shaky hand doing psychic surgery on me. And it does vary from person to person. There's plenty of people listening to this that are like, yeah, you know, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. You know, they didn't have anything really to work on. They were curious and they might've done, you know, a few grams of mushrooms in the woods and had a great experience. They might've done a solo heroic dose, like Terrence McKenna says, at dark by yourself and had a beautiful experience. But the more stuff there is to unpack, the more stuff there is to heal from, the greater the degree of the professional that you need in front of you. And even if you don't have a whole lot to work on and you're just there to learn, shit can go south really quick if you've got anybody less than a black belt providing for you. And I've seen that first fucking hand where things got a little out of control. And while me on the receiving end is then asked to participate in helping out the circumstances, and it's like, that's not a position you want to be in as somebody that's going to experience the medicine. You want to know the container is fucking solid and that everyone there is good enough to sing people back into the right frequency, sage people, smudge people, do whatever. So Plato, whatever's necessary to hold that container in a state of peace. And yeah, shit's going to pop off. People might shit their pants or puke or yell or scream. That's all a part of that container. But keeping it within the container and holding that container is definitely something that you can see a very wide variety of skill sets necessary to be able to do that well.
I think you got a situation in this that's so vast that a lot of people are comparing apples and oranges. So the psychedelic space is so vast, we have to understand what part of it we're talking about, right? And when you're talking about just having, quote, a trip, it's a small dose, you're going in by yourself or something like that, it's completely different than the intention when you go in for healing and you know you're going to be bringing up the stuff that you have buried or is challenging for you. It's like, you know, you're not going there already for a reason. So now you're going to open it up with this mind-altering substance. You got to expect what you're going to find, right? And then there's this whole other learning side of it. And that idea of things going south, you know, people will be like, hey, I do this by myself. I don't have any problem. I go, yeah, but the intention is completely different. You had the intention of something that's going to open it up. You have to have then there the people that can really handle it. And when something goes south, that's the whole point of what we're trained in. So guiding things when everything's smooth is actually really easy. It's really easy when everything's smooth. It's guiding things when it goes hard, which is where you need the extensive amount of training. And so, you know, again, the warnings are out there. Take them seriously. And you got to be able to compare what you know you're dealing with. When you're dealing with really hardcore healing stuff, what can go down is exponentially more difficult to deal with. And if you're going for really big learning, it's the exact same scenario because you have to ask yourself, what's the difference between me and this state of consciousness and me in this enlightened state of consciousness? You're going to go in your journey through all of it. You're going to go through everything of why you're not in that enlightened state of consciousness already, you know, and you might defecate your pants.
And you likely will have to live all of the undesirable states that are standing in the way of you being in that enlightened state, you know, and that in and of itself is a mind fuck. Yeah. I loved getting to sit with you for the first time. I have mad appreciation for our brother Aubrey Marcus for finally introducing us. I had heard about you for years prior to that, and you know, the experience was fantastic. We talked about that in our first round. One of the things that you talked to me about, because you know, having gone into dark places as at the level that I had gone in with the dose that I had gone in, I wanted to make sure that you knew what you were talking about when you said, yeah, I've been there, you know, yeah, I've been to hell. It's like, all right, describe it for me. And one of the things you said was that really rung me like a bell from the interior was that hell is all mind. There is no heart in hell. And just whew,
like right through the body, full on. I could feel that. No, he's been in the exact same place I've been in. How often, I mean, it took you years and fucking massive congratulations for sticking with it. For years, you had to go to these places as somebody training to work with this medicine. Is that correct? 2-3 years? You every time you drank, you'd go into the darkness?
Oh, longer than that. I mean, you go into the darkness because it's in you and then it's in others. And then when you learn how to deal with it, you bring in new people that need to go and dig it out of them. And there it all is again. The only thing that changes is you get better at how you deal with it. And so it's not even like you ultimately transcend it. Ultimately, it just becomes no big deal that that's what you're dealing with. But you know, for someone who's a novice in the situation, it's a really big deal because you don't have the skills and the solidarity and the integrity within you to know how to handle yourself within those spaces. But it's true. I mean, the hell part is all mind, and it doesn't have the nature of your soul in it nor your heart in it. And so it becomes both incredibly scary and like a hall of mirrors where you don't know where to go. And you don't know how to get out. You don't know what to do, and you feel trapped, and things can get pretty scattered pretty fast. But you go into it and you learn from it through the experience of navigating it over and over and over and over again. But ultimately, I developed a style that I call sanctuary. It's a method and it's a philosophy that gives us a container that is infinitely, infinitely supportive of you going through that experience. So no matter how big it gets, no matter how big the amplitude, no matter how scary, no matter how much internal terror the container holds, no matter how vast, like size, I know it's hard to believe, but when you're talking about things way bigger than spiral galaxies, you know, and that come through these visions, it's big enough to contain that. And it's also big enough to contain like the worst aspect of yourself that you don't know how to deal with. So like the totality or shadow or whatever it is that you're bonded to. So that's really helped a lot in terms of dealing with that.
That's massive. And on that note, is that something that you're teaching online or something that you would basically work with somebody on who comes to Blue Morpho and works with you for a while?
I mean, we were talking about how you hold a container, right? And sanctuary really was a solution for this issue of container because we were in the game at the biggest levels. And so at the biggest levels, it's as big as any of the biggest games there are on the planet. And so the idea of how you maintain your container is a huge part of it. So I was looking for a bulletproof container, unhackable, no matter what happened, it would hold, safe for everybody, had within it everything that everyone needed, all the resources within it to be able to bring the healing, balancing, and grounding that everyone needs, that had within it the capacity of the visions. Because you'll see in the space, a lot of people want to limit it to try to deal with that. They try to like block you off from stuff so that you can't actually go into the totality of what you need. I didn't want any of that. I wanted to be free, but actually fully held. And so I developed it. And since then, you know, I teach sanctuary. I teach it online. I teach it in our certification programs. I teach it in our mystery school. And it's the container that I use on all of our retreats.
Ooh, buddy. I love it. I'm in for that. That sounds awesome. Yeah, we've been chatting a bunch off air, and everything that you're into right now, I think, is both timely and awesome. What are some of the things you're still traveling all over the world? You hold space in different countries. Obviously, you know, you primarily work with your primary medicine where you're at in Blue Morpho and things of that nature. But how much do you see? I mean, you talked about this on Aubrey Marcus's podcast too when I first met you. Like the press, and Gaffney talks about this, the risk of existential threat seems to be ever-bearing. And this is likely a cyclical thing that has happened, you know, at various points in time throughout history. But it does appear now with the technology we have and with everything going on that there's a number of threats, you know, and one of the things that Gaffney says that really I think is true is that if we don't lose humanity via atomic bombs or something like that, we lose our humanity. And that could be via a one world government dictatorship that creates a socialist society and new world order, that kind of thing. When you understand all that, is there a pressure that you feel to be able to get as many people switched on as possible? Or is it something where you know that the amount that you do is enough and that there are other people doing that amount as well? Like, how would you describe your sense of equanimity right now as you balance both sides? Do you even look at it that way?
the existential threat to humanity is real. It's real. And it's been real for a long time. I mean, we were born already with an existential threat to humanity, only it's getting hyperpolarized and it's getting hot. And when it heats up, it requires a lot of action to try to bring that into balance. And so I think for those that understand it and feel called, they have an understanding of what we call mission. They understand that there's a mission to help try to bring balance to this and preserve humanity. Now, what you say about, you know, humanity extincting itself is real, but also humanity losing its humanity is very real. And I think the existential threat of humanity losing its humanity is hotter right now than humanity extincting itself. The biggest issue, I think, is we have to prove to Earth our relevance. I think right now that human as a species has to actually show why the Earth should perpetuate it. Not just humans doing it to themselves, but the Earth could extinct us fastest. And the way it can do it is through our own creations now, whether we call them AI or distributed computing systems, information technology, whatever. I don't think it matters what we call it. That's the name that we're giving it. What we're doing right now is birthing a new kind of mega system, mega life here of Earth. It doesn't have to be biological at all. As soon as it runs itself for itself, as itself, it's, and it's distributed already, it's on for its own right. Like, it's just all the computers, all interconnected, all combined with all the satellites, all of that together. That's the existential threat we have right now. And it's our own creation. I don't think anyone's doing enough. No one's doing enough. There's no enough you could do. We have to ally together to take roles within something that's existential and global. And we have to do our part. Now, your part may be awareness, or your part may be just letting people know it's happening, or your part might be just sitting with it and holding that for yourself. Or there will be other people who are great spokespeople for it, and they're going to be on social and on podcasts and talking about it. But everybody has a role in this because we're all human. And so we have to do something about it. It's just that simple. It's at a really important time in history, and it's game on.
I love that. And I really appreciated the conversation with Paul regarding AI. I've read Nick Bostrom's book. I think it's called Superintelligence. Bostrom's been in that space for a long time. Fantastic book. And he gave several examples of the way that went south. Like, it could be a super intelligent AI that does makes paperclips. It becomes so efficient that it takes all the resources from the planet to do so until there's nothing but paperclips, and everything has been mined completely, which is a kind of a silly, funny way. But if you see there's no parameters around something, that could actually happen, right? And then he goes into much more likely or much more believable scenarios. One of the questions that I've had is, as Selig states, all is of or nothing is, meaning all is source, all is God, all is consciousness, no matter what you want to call that, or nothing is. And if we're all of the same thing, then, when people, like you said, if I'm tracking this correctly, to call something artificial is not necessarily true. It's like when we say we're not a part of nature, right? Like, if we create this thing and it has the intelligence to perpetuate itself and to grow its own consciousness, it may lack some of our biological impulses, our ability to love or look after one another, the familial bloodline stuff, or any of that. It may lack those things. But it is still consciousness, right? It is still of source, So Deus ex machina, the God in the machine, it is that, right? And it could be there. They say that once it reaches a super intelligent state, and of course these terminology changes over time, but once it reaches that capability, it could learn in a 24-hour cycle what it takes us to learn in 20,000 years. So you consider that every day it's learning 20,000 years and storing 20,000 years worth of data and information at a certain point in time. And that's just the point when it starts to go exponentially higher than that. That's too hard to fathom, right? It's like trying to fathom the size of the universe. Like, we can't put that in pictures.
It's too fast. Imagine while it's doing it, it created a trillion models of how to improve it at the same time. And that was in a second, and it could do it again every second, and you get a trillion new models of how to try to problem solve something at the same time. It's a scale of data processing we don't know. And it brings up a big question for me I think is really important, which is, what is sovereignty? And what's the importance of your sovereignty? And we've accepted, all different kinds of data analysis and, using phones and stuff like that. but what's your internal sovereignty? Like, does this thing or machines or somebody behind the machines have the right to all your thoughts, all your feelings, all your electrical impulses? Does it have a right to all your molecules and to know what they're doing? Like, we'd go to doctors and we give blood samples and stuff like that. But what happens when the things that are around us can abstract us? And where does the beginning of us and the line to what is actually ours begin and end? And I think that's what's really at stake here. When they talk about losing your humanity, you're losing your sovereignty as a unique individual here of Earth, based on the idea that these machines, again, whether on their own or by humans who own them and are using them, have a right to just take something from you that you may not want to give. And I think that's really what we're getting to. And we're coming really close to that. It's not crux issue. It's not just about being chipped or having something inside you. It's about having something near you that can just harness everything from you, basically like data mine you 100% of the time, just based on you. And we have to decide whether or not that's something that we're going to allow or not. Like, you know, what's the line when something can just take everything from you? And where does our sovereignty really, you know, exist? And people are already willing to give away certain aspects, but this is the big question that's coming up about our humanity.
I love that. And I think about that a lot. You know, like there are small, maybe not that small. If it happened to me, it'd be pretty fucking big. But I think about the trucker strike in Canada, you know, and having their bank accounts frozen, you know, all of their assets taken and frozen illegally, mind you, you know, and that's really, you don't think of that in a first world country, but that is how a dictator would run. You know, a dictator might behead those people and then take their money, but it's very in line in that you freeze someone's assets and freeze the people's assets of anyone contributing to a nonviolent protest in a first world country. Like, we're blurring the lines here on, are we living in a free society or not?
The lines are blurred. The freedom is only the question of your participation and complicit awareness. If you don't want to be a part of it, you have no choice but to be a part of it. So what we're a part of is, I think, the question. You know, what are we actually doing and what are we a part of? Right now, okay, our lives haven't been that disrupted, but the disrupt is coming. And it's not some like great warning. It's already there. It's inside your phones. It's inside your computers. It's inside every connected device. And the amplitude, like we're talking about, is going to go exponential very soon. And so when we understand that, you have to start thinking, like, how do I have my own sovereign existence in the middle of all of this? And say, okay, your bank accounts get frozen. Your car won't drive. You're not allowed to go to a restaurant. You're not allowed to buy food and water. Now what? That's how fast it is. So what does that ultimately mean to us? And someone said, but no one would do that. Well, our history is that every society has done something similar to that, and every empire has done something similar to that at some point back when things got really hot and, you know, really difficult. So I think that's what we're up against now. And again, it's our collective doing. It's not one person does it to us all and we complain. We have to decide with the responsibility within ourselves, what are we going to do about our technology, our governments, our economies, and our societies?
That's beautifully stated. Yeah. And for people naysaying right now, that's exactly what's happening in China. Talk about social credit and things like that. And the thing, most people don't realize this, but we have more cameras watching it, more surveillance cameras watching people in the United States than there are in China. China has 1 billion people. We've got 300 million in change. And yet we have more cameras here than they do there. And they're already quite successful in being able to control the population via social credit and different things like that. Make one wrong statement online, via a podcast, via social media. It's not just getting shadow banned on Instagram. It's now you can't, you get on a train and they say you're not allowed to leave the city. You know, that happens constantly, where there's, you know, plenty of evidence of that. It's not just guys like David Icke talking about it. There's a lot of people that are talking about the situation there. And if you pay attention, it looks like all the parameters necessary to set that up pretty much internationally have all been put in place already.
Yeah, it's not a question of an us versus them thing. It's a slow cook. It's ramp up, ramp up, ramp up, ramp up so slowly that you don't even understand that it's happening. And then at some point, it happens to you, and then you lament the fact that it happened to you instead of being in front of it. And it's not like being a prepper and being freaked out and living in paranoia. It's really saying collectively, like, this is the time of greatest technological expansion. This is the time of greatest economic expansion. This is the time of greatest intellectual expansion and scientific expansion. And right now, greatest consciousness-based awakening ever in history. Well, what do we want to do with that, guys? How do we actually align our interests? How do we align as a nation? How do we align with our democratic capacities and use that for the very best purpose for why we created this country and why our ancestors created this country in the first place, or why we've created the world the way that it is? Now, to think that the world needs to stay the same is ridiculous, because evolution has been changing everything all the time. So there aren't two moments that are the same. Evolution changes everything. Everything's in a constant flux and movement and change. It's us guiding and directing that change. We've come from a time of utilizing laws and regulation to be able to create prohibitions to try to control the path of development and growth. And that's not working anymore. So we need to come up with a better modality and a better way to guide and direct our society, guide and direct each other as a collective, do it in a democratic means, and actually plan for the future instead of lamenting the big woe is me that some bad stuff happened to us.
Yeah, I think when it comes to a lot of these things, it's, you know, I think Einstein's definition of an insanity, you know, where you do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. I think it is insane for us to think within the realm of fixing our current systems. Like, how do we make the economy work? How can we make, corporations work? How do we make any of these things work that we need to fix? How do we make education work? It's not that you do away with education or that you do away with some form of trade. You know, obviously that's always going to be with us. But I think it's in creating new systems, parallel systems that are far better than the old one. And those just come to replace it. It's not in, you demo a wall and start adding new stuff into the house that already exists, and somehow that fixes it. We've been doing that for so long, it's not working anymore. And I think one of the tough pills to swallow is that we all elected to come in a time where a lot of shit's going to break. And if we can set up parallel systems in the interim, we have an opportunity to make that transition smooth. If we don't, then we're going to have a lot of pain.
I think it all starts with you. It goes back to you knowing yourself and knowing what you're going to do about this. And parallel systems, I agree, is exactly what needs to be built. And they need to be built with better architecture, better engineering, starting with what we have today, instead of building on archaic understandings that come from 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, et cetera. That's the point of us developing and growing as a society. And what we have now are the tools necessary to rapidly develop what needs to come next. Now, most of us were born post-World War II, and so we don't know what it was like going from pre-baby boomer generation to baby boomer generation. We don't get it. That's like a historical story for us. But all the stuff that we're using, that we're calling like the archaic technology and understanding, came from that time to now. So now you got to look at it that we have this whole new series of technology, science, and understanding that have really come about in the last 20 years. And we have to decide, how do we use those best for everybody, not how do a few corporations use those to get super rich, which is what happened in the last 30 years. On the contrary, now there's a social crisis that's taking place. And we have to understand how we now take the tools that we have to actually get ahead of this thing. And, you know, wealth disparity is a part of it. But it's really about our decision, how you say parallel systems, how we take that forward.
I like that. Well, let's talk here. You've got a few things in the works since we last spoke about what you're creating a lot. And you know, obviously, the best things in life are birthed out of necessity. So I really appreciate the work that you're doing in the world. Talk about the retreats you have coming up at Blue Morpho, but also talk about the mystery schools and some of the different offerings that you have, and you know, take your time, dive into these things. I'm not trying to wrap right at the second. Really, really lay it out what people are getting in each of these.
Yeah. First, you come to plant medicines because you have a need, and that need is your call. And the need is personal, and it can be mental, emotional, where you are in your life, how you want to grow, how you want to succeed, what you want to do, or what you want to change. And I think when you feel within yourself that you want to expand what you're doing and that you feel limited because of the way things are, that's when you come to these medicines. Like, that's when you'd go on a vision quest because you need a vision. or that's when you come to the plant medicine because you need an intervention, a healing, or some kind of transformation. And that can even be just, how do I take it to the next level? Obviously, if I'm not at the next level, something's blocking me or holding me back. And that's what I want to get to. And so that's really what our work is all about. It's about helping you get to your next level. And we have different ways that we do that. The way we've been doing it over the last 20 years is by inviting people to come down here to the Amazon or to Peru in the Sacred Valley and come participate in plant medicine events with us. And these really are events. We can call them retreats, but these are a massive event in our lives. And here in the Amazon, we hold 4 ayahuasca ceremonies or retreats with 2 ayahuasca ceremonies and 2 San Pedro ceremonies. And we take you into sanctuary. We have this infinite container for us to expand into, and we can hold it for you so that you can go as deep as you want to go. So truly, you are the one who's going to decide how deep this goes, and we can go as deep gets. Now, you know, you come on the retreats, and then you got to ask yourself what you're going to do with this great intervention you've had in your life. And we have a mystery school, which is also our integration program. We meet on a monthly basis and on a weekly basis. We do a ceremony a month, we do a lecture a month, and we have integration circles and sharing circles. And we also get together in small group and one-on-one. And so the point of that is for you to have a community of people who understand that they're taking their lives to the next level, and they're doing so in a community through these plant medicines. And one of the hardest parts in these spaces is having friends and having community that supports you, that understands the tools that you're using and the experiences you're having. And so that's what the Mystery School provides. It's community, it's continuity, it's a weekly to monthly basis as you need, and it's there to be able to keep both your intellectual learning and your ceremonial growth on a continuous basis. And then we have an academy, and inside our academy, we have certification programs, and we're teaching people to be certified as sitters and coaches, facilitators and master facilitators for the psychedelic renaissance and the plant medicine movement. And we teach you how to work with ayahuasca, psilocybin, San Pedro, and cannabis. We teach you all the basics of sanctuary. We teach you how to be there for your friends and family going through these experiences, how to speak with authority and understanding and real expertise about the experiences. And then for those who are into this on a professional level, it's to take their professional career to the next level and also be able to help them have the credibility that they need in this space. Like you said, where there are white belts and blue belts and purple belts and whatever, this is about taking you to black belt. And it's a progressive series of courses. You start at sitter and coach, and then you move to facilitator. And some of the very elite from that will move to master facilitator. And so those are the different events and the membership community that we have going on right now in our certification programs. And we would love to have you check us out at bluemorphoacademy.com and bluemorphotours.com and come and participate in this. If you resonate with what we're talking about, this is the time to be able to get involved and really make a difference for yourself, your loved ones, and the world that we're talking about.
Fuck yeah, brother. It has been absolutely awesome having you back on the podcast. Anytime you want to come on, just reach out. It's always a joy to connect with you, and I'm excited to learn more from you. I'm not sure when we'll see each other next with the move and everything going on this year, but it is high on my list to be able to sit with you again and share and learn from you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and it's always a pleasure to see you. Can't wait to see you soon.
Thank you, brother.